Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Discussions with Delia. I'm your host, Delia Farquharson, and it's Mother's Day. And, you know, our show is coming on at a different time. We're typically on at 3, but today we're on at 6. I think it's in honor of Mother's Day. So that's great that we're on in honor of Mother's Day. And I'm so glad you're able to join us this evening. We have a special guest that I'm excited to have a conversation with this young man and to share, as I discover, you know, what he's about and what he's working on and what light he's bringing to the world. So I'm really delighted to welcome Ty Nero. Hi, Ty. How are you?
Hello, how are you today?
I'm very well.
I'm
thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining me. It took us a minute, but we got it.
Finally.
Great. So
I have to get
I'm glad
my.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say I have to get my bearings. I can't believe I'm so honored to be in this space to talk to you about what we're going to talk about.
Right. Which is, you know, I will start there. We'll start with you. Right, we'll start with, who is Ty Nero?
Well, it's an interesting story. You know, I kind of try to define it by being happy as a black man, but
mm-hmm.
also Ty Nero is also angry as a black man. So I'm a social worker that has gotten quite a few accolades as far as academia. So I have a
mm-hmm.
master's in public administration. I have a master's in social work. But I'm truly just a black man trying to be the best man I can in my community.
Right. And that sounds like a noble goal to have, right? Because we all are, I think, when we become evolved or enlightened beings, are always trying to become better versions of ourselves. And that's actually what this show is about. Discussions with Delia is about that, leading discussions and helping people on that path of discovering how to become a better version of themselves.
Thank you. This is the best place to be then.
So then tell me this, Ty. Black Diaries sounds like an interesting, complex, yet simple idea. How did that come to be? Tell me, you're a co-founder of Black Diaries. What is it and how did it
It's amazing what Black Diaries has turned into. Going to Columbia University as a social work student in 2013 and 14, I graduated 2014, there were just a group of very articulate black students that did not want to have the typical Black History Month. You know, there was a thing about Black History Month that always goes back and talks about what other people did. But we as students decided to look at what was going on in our community. So as social workers, we did like 4 weeks of conversation, talked about one thing was how is it to be black and have transgender issues? How is it to be black and have issues with your mother? Or how is it to be black and have financial crisis? And as a body of students, we had these discussions. So when I graduated, Christina and I, my business partner, or my vision partner, I guess that would be a better word, decided to do documentaries and look at us as a group of people. So she illustrated and created a video that said how to survive being black on a predominantly white institution.
Mm.
And that was kind of like the first piece of work that we did.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, we've been all over the place. We've been to Baltimore, just talking to folks. We actually went to Baltimore when the riots were going on, giving out water, handing out towels. We have documented that just to
mm-hmm.
see what was going on in the world.
Mm-hmm. So it's a compilation and I guess the recording or documentation of the narrative, correct?
Yes, yes.
Of the narrative experience. So,
yes,
to
so
what end? Yeah, go ahead.
So the narrative, it becomes very complex in some of our works that we've had so far. So and I apologize. I can talk through like all of the processes.
I'm really fascinated by it. So please, that's what I want.
Okay.
You know, I want people to hear and understand and to sense the kind of excitement that, you know, that I feel about your work.
Thank you. So then let me continue. So let me say, it's so amazing what we're doing in different communities. So right now I'm in Mount Vernon, which is my hometown. We have something that we are working on and we're trying hard to get accomplished. I'm trying to start a plantation series and go to different communities and talk about what's going on in the community. So in Mount Vernon, I'm working with beautiful people, and I won't name folks because I won't get anyone like exposed in their endeavors. But we're talking about money under Mount Vernon to Murderville. And what is that? What
mm-hmm.
is that in a community where people were beautiful? I remember Mount Vernon as a city and the people doing different things. I still have friends there. I go there all the time. And
mm-hmm.
we want to just talk about why did that change and why did it stop? You know, I hope, you know, if President Obama's listening, I am my brother's keeper. That's what we're working on. We're working on trying to figure out who our brothers are and let them talk. Let's have a discussion.
Right, right. So, I mean, whose framing or reframing or definition of, you know, is it your perspective? Is it a collective perspective? For example, we know Mount Vernon has that history, right? And it's
mm-hmm.
such a beautiful. It's my home of being, you know, having all these accomplished people who originate from Mount Vernon. Right?
And it's ridiculous how talented that city is. Think of I get amazed when I think about the history of Mount Vernon. Denzel Washington, one of the most accomplished black actors, is from Mount Vernon. Dick Clark, one of the most accomplished white like host is from Mount Vernon. There's a lead of different entertainers that come in and out of Mount Vernon. And it must be something with the beat. The heartbeat of Mount Vernon is special.
Right. And so
there's one thing I would love to think about. When I look, you know, I'm a military man, so when I look at the map and I say, wow, what is in between New York City and white money? And it's the black people right in the middle. So Third Street appears to be in trouble.
Yeah.
Somebody wants to get that space. I'm sorry, that's kind of controversial.
Right.
I got to be careful what I say.
No, but you know, the thing about it is about understanding that because we've seen the kind of gentrification that has occurred in many communities, right? And,
yes.
You know, and the kind of, you know, we want to say the kind of decay that is allowed to occur,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think it's really important. We just completed Wellness Week in Mount Vernon because we want to look at wellness as a comprehensive thing in the community. How can a community
mm-hmm.
be well, you know, if we have, you know, rampant murders, if we have, you know, dreadful housing, if we have deadbeat landlords, if we have such large number of people living in poverty, you know, we have such unemployment. If we have those kinds of things, you know, how can a community be well? And how easily could those things be erased? And what's causing them to not be erased, right? What's causing them to not be eliminated? Why can't we, you know, some of the industries that occur here, why aren't we seeing the result of that reflected in the lives of the people who live in the community?
Well, I have an observation, I have an opinion, and I don't know why no one else sees this, but I used to get frustrated. I lived in Brooklyn for like 10 years. I was a director of a shelter out there, and I won't name them because I don't want anyone getting mad at me, but it's just interesting when the contracts come through and you see who puts the building up and what their hue is. But it's, I always see a brother walking around with a flashlight making sure nobody steals nothing. Why can't we be putting the buildings up? And on, if I'm putting a shelter up in Mount Vernon, why is my skin color white and my money going back to my white neighborhood? It makes no sense. But you're going to hire a couple of dudes. That's how it is, because they don't even have, like, a real job that lasts for a long time. They have a temporary job that you done went to a temp agency, which is your temp agency, because somebody that you hooked up with, and I'm going to give you a couple of money, a couple of dollars for this temp person to put this building up, and then bounce. So they come into the hood, even put our buildings up, and get out with our money. We can't get a, we don't have any black men that know how to do contracts, put buildings up. You know, no black companies. No,
you know,
it's a vetting process.
Right. But you know, Ty, let's consider this. For example, Mount Vernon has been a black run city for a long time. Right? So then the question becomes, Ty, how come we, our condition, our situation is no better 20 years down the line?
You hit the nail on the head. And Mount Vernon is run by a black city council, but the rules is what hold us back. The rules is what drives us bananas.
What
not even
mean?
The fact that we don't vote. Even if they voted for something, there's still New York State that'll keep us oppressed. Or, like, I bet you whoever's been wanting to get that land in Mount Vernon, been trying to get it for years, they probably would have even came in there and bought us out. But people are saying, nah, we're going to wait till they die. You know, I got to watch my mouth there because I really use words that might be unsafe.
Because this is about social justice. It really is about social justice. And so when we think about social justice, it's about then if we have people in power who are of our hue and who espouse the desire to make conditions better for the general population of Mount Vernon, what has hindered it? You're saying it's the rules. But if you are, quote-unquote, the rule maker, at least the rule shaker, you know, how come things have changed in the last 25, 30 years? How come?
That's the funny thing, because when I was little, we had a mayor, Blackwood. He was black. He was probably the first mayor. He was the first black mayor probably in New York. We keep thinking that it's like slavery was just 50 years ago. I was in Virginia last week, and those dudes are still slaves. The Commonwealth of Virginia got those black men on and families in a chokehold.
Yeah, I know they do, right?
And it's amazing that we don't see that.
Right. But Mayor Davis served for five terms, and we had Clinton Young, we had Mayor Blackwood. So we've had for the last, I'm going to say, at least the last 30 years, we've had black mayors.
Mm-hmm.
But at least
that
the
don't
last
mean that they're the leaders. They still got to deal with the Italians who keep telling them what to do. I was in Mount Vernon the other day. I seen this big truck and a name that I seen when I was little. I can't be calling names out. But, like, the people who control the commerce are really the people who make things work. Oh, you want something? We'll make sure.
Yeah, we understand that, you know, that there are, you know, power is a layered thing and it's a complex thing, right? We understand that.
Yeah, there's levels.
But then you wonder. The question that I wonder is, how then do we keep getting series and successing leaders and council people and you know, other leaders that just kind of like join the line and don't question or don't try to against the grain.
I think once you start looking at America from the American point of view, and not the black point of view, you get confused. Because the goal is different. As a black person, when I see a black person, I'm like, oh, man, I hope he's winning. I hope things are going good for him. When I look at America's point of view, like, it's like, dang, this nigga need to get his shit. Excuse me, this dude need to get his stuff together. If he don't get his stuff together, he going to fail. He going to die. But when I look in a black man's eyes, he could be from Africa, from Jamaica, from Trinidad, from Turks and Caicos, from Marcy Projects. I'm like, yo, can we have a talk? Do you feel the same pressure as I do? I live in Harlem. I walked down the street yesterday. I seen these black people because the police got us under pressure and nobody understands it. So I'm walking and I'm saying, well, damn, why is that police car here? Because they don't have anybody to arrest right now. So they looking for stuff. And I asked these black people, I said, yo, do you feel like there's a lot of cops and there's pressure? And they were like, yes. I asked the same white guy the same thing when I walked by. He's like, yes, it's wonderful, isn't it?
Right.
They protected.
They
protected in my neighborhood.
Right. It's a different experience, a different perspective. So then, Ty, you know, as a social worker, we are educated to look at solutions mostly, right?
Yes. Problem, solution, execution.
So tell me now, from your vantage point, you know, I mean, what do you see? What do you see in terms of
solution? So this is the funny thing, I'll be honest. I see God is working with black people and trying to give them a sense of understanding. And it's even through, like, years ago when we were younger, Delia, I'm 48. When we were younger and rap started, rap was, like, let's put it in perspective. Rap was black people talking to each other about what's going on. Like, we was chilling. And then it's part of reggae. It was like, we probably learned it when the Jamaicans came up here and was chilling with us, with the African Americans. Because once we started hanging out together, it was love. Once we realized that we could hang out together, we didn't have to fight. Because my grandmother, let me tell you what the story I heard about my grandmother. My great-grandmother was a house person working for the white people in the 20s and the 30s. And once they started letting the Jamaicans in, and no disrespect, because my grandfather's Jamaican, my son has a Jamaican mother. What happened was the white people used the Jamaican immigrants and gave them a dollar, gave them an undercut to black people who was trying to make it happen. And then they did the same thing to the Jamaicans and gave it to the Mexicans. So the Jamaicans know what the black Americans feel like because they niggas now. The Jamaicans are niggas just like the niggas were. And I apologize for the colorful language, but I think that's a way to get it across. And some of my friends, they get to me with my language, and I apologize. And for your audience, please forgive me. I use these words with frustration because as a black man coming from where I came from, those are words that people understand to give them a shock therapy. And the shock therapy is like, oh, wait, did he say that? And it might be distasteful for us educated people. However, if we need to talk about the DSM-5 and we need to talk about categorizing black people and putting them in pigeonholes and putting them in things like that, I can talk about that. I can talk about it in a respectful way with the right words.
That I don't get caught up on that. I think language is important, but if that's what you need to use to express yourself in order to feel like you have been understood, then that's acceptable to me, right? That if that's how you feel that you need to express yourself. But I want to say that, how do you respond if someone says then that whole idea of setting up the African American against the Caribbean people and the Spanish against the Caribbean people is a manipulation of the system by those who are by the puppeteers who say, this is how we keep that crab mentality going, right? Because if I can with this idea that, okay, look, you were getting $2, but if I can pay the Caribbean people $1 to do what you were doing for $2, then, well, first of all, you're going to hate the Caribbean people, and I'll just always keep you separated because you're going to be thinking of each other as enemies, right?
Enemies.
And then the same thing for the Spanish workers, people from Spanish-speaking countries, if you say, well, now the Caribbean people were getting $1, but I'll give you 50 cents, And so now you have the African-American fighting against the Caribbean. Now the Caribbean is disliking the Spanish because they're taking 50 cents for a job that was originally $2. Meantime, a conversation, communication, collaboration, and cooperation might have led to everybody making $3, because if we said we're going to join hands and we're not going to do this job because it's actually worth $5, but listen, we'll cut you a break for 50.
Exactly. I don't know why you know the reason we haven't been able to do it? I think we speak different languages. As far as when I look at, and of course we do, but when I look at, like, with a discerning eye, I look at people that have different ways of expressing themselves and not understanding that they're saying the same thing. Like, there's sometimes I can say something to a black person and they won't get it, but let me go talk to one of my rosters, they got it, and they're teaching me. So the thing is, if we don't respect each other's, like, way of looking at life, because culture messes, kind of messes things up, because when you look at culture, you're ignoring the human value. And you look at religion, forget it. You look at religion and culture, then human value just disappears. Like that human one, you know, the relationship that a human gets with God taken away sometimes when you look at if you look at a bigger religion, like how can you look at a big religion? Because religion is one thing, but my relationship with God is personal. How is the church going to tell me I can't do something and God is the one who's going to forgive me later? So why do I have to follow the church's mores?
Right. I'm going to say, though, Ty, yeah, you know, that I think, I mean, that I think the ego, right, the presence of the ego is what has limited and restricted people, no matter what cultural identification they wear, from recognizing that they are being manipulated, right? Like when I think about Donald Trump, for example, who's like manipulating the media right now, he's a master at that. He's managed to be able to, you know, to snatch the conversation and to just really dominate the conversation. So everything is about Donald Trump because he says these things that are so outrageous.
I think him and Hillary are in cahoots. It's ridiculous to think about why would we even be considering her? And the Bernie Sanders is just a mirror. He's smoking mirrors because there's no way in the world this country was in the middle of this country they would even think about a Jewish man running anything. He's just a rich man.
But I think that's it, though. It's the same thing in terms of understanding that from a local perspective, in our community, right, we are so busy blaming everything else and looking out, like being selfish and looking out for how do I survive, how do I get more, how do I get a nicer car, or look, you know, the newest sneakers, and not recognizing that we are stronger by being united, right? I noticed, for example, that your colors for Black Diaries are the colors that Marcus Garvey used. And I'm sure that was intentional.
God has given.
So what was the intention there?
You know, I've been blessed to be around the right people all the time. And black people don't understand. When they were black people, they were around the right people, but they weren't talking about the right thing. Like, literally, our conversation, I'm learning so much from you because we're talking about stuff about us. There's no reason. Like, if we keep talking about Donald Trump, once he gets in charge, we're going to be, like, scared. I'm not scared of him. I'm not scared of anybody, especially when I'm with my black people, because once they start doing what they got to do and I go to God, guess what I'm going to tell him? God, I'm sorry I made some choices. But God, they had me under pressure. The black people started talking to God and stopped talking to Jesus because for some reason they changed Jesus' face to white, and I apologize to them. I don't know why they did it, but I think I know why. It's good. Listen, when we watch Beverly Hills Cop, we always watch a young black, really good cop look up to a white, sloppy-ass cop. Like, it's ridiculous. Even when we watch TV shows, even Blackish, the bosses are goofy white men.
Right. It's manipulation again, though, you know, and this is where I'm saying that we have to be able to sift through it, right? Like, not be distracted by that, right? So I mean, there will always be noise in the room. There will always be noise in the room. So how do we manage to have a focus on what our goals are? How do we manage to be committed to having, you know, conversations that can advance the cause rather than be focused on things that are designed to distract us, right? So I mean, you know, and I guess that you know, those are the questions that I wonder, you know.
So it's amazing some of the things that we've gotten into. Christina is really focused with an international view, so she's leading a group of people, and I don't like to say the word leading because it kind of can be scary.
Mm-hmm.
She's working on some really good things that are just informational. Like, we went to Haiti just to dance with the Haitians, but the trick is we went to an orphanage. We stayed in the hood. We go to everywhere we go is the hood, even in Africa, even in Haiti. We stay in huts. This is an amazing experience, even on an international view. We want to know what it's like to be in the hood. What is the hood? The hood is where we live.
That's right. It's the authentic experience, right? It's the real experience.
I need to go to Jamaica and go to Tivoli Projects and see some folks and say, hey, this is our experience in New York. I want to tell somebody that my mother was 42. She had AIDS, and she died. I was 20. I raised my brothers and sisters, me and my younger brother, because I was 20, and he was 18. My brothers and sisters did never see a foster home because we seen a foster home when my mother was alive, and we knew what it was like, so we had to be with each other. We had to. At a young age, from 20 to 30, I raised teenagers. My sister was 10 when my mother died. And if I could go to Jamaica and say that, they might say, oh, wow, that's a rough life. But then I could also say my grandmother was an alcoholic because she was escaping prosecution in the South because she had kids unwed. And my great-grandmother was a slave. And the men were not there. So if that's a consistent story or dialogue with some people, They can see I'm succeeding because all I did was look at my family. I looked at black people. I looked at the qualities in my brothers and sisters from my mother's eyes. Because mothers are important. Every black woman is a queen.
Mm.
She's the queen of her kids. She's the queen of her man. If he's smart enough to know that he's a king. Women should be looking at their men. They don't grow up until they go through some stuff.
Right.
So,
I mean, I think that happens with human beings. I'm going to say that, Ty, this has been a fascinating discussion for me. And I'm going to tell you that we've been talking straight for a half an hour. I don't know if you realize it. And our show is a half an hour. But I want to thank you. I would really like to for us to, you know, maybe schedule some time, more time in the future. I'm glad we were able to get this in so folks can get a sense of what you're thinking about, what you're working about, and that you are shedding light on some really tough things in our community. So I want to thank you for your time today. I really do. And I look forward to speaking with you again perhaps soon.
I can't wait. And also, it's Black Diaries, you don't know my story. So the thing is, that takes ownership of your story and ownership of your life. So thank you, Delia, so much. I can't wait till we speak again. And we have to learn how to together.
Great. We have to. So thanks so much, Ty. Enjoy your evening.
You have a great one. Thank you so much.
All right. Peace and blessings.
Bye-bye. Bless.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Discussions with Delia. Please follow me on Twitter at Discussion Delia or like our Facebook page, Delia Positively Speaking. See you next week. Peace and blessings.